Mini episode 208 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 208. This is Rick Morris coming at you. We've got a great one here for you today. One of our original FDH Lounge dignitaries and our FDH Director of Research joining us for our preview of the 2012-2013 NBA season. We're doing this actually a couple days after the season has started, but we're very, very fortuitous, I think, in terms of the timing, because we've had a chance to digest the news at the beginning of the season, the Lakers losing streak, and prior to that, the very shocking trade of James Harden to the Houston Rockets by Oklahoma City when they could not work out a contract extension with him. So there is a lot to discuss in looking ahead for what should be a very exciting season. Who better to do it with than, as I say, FDH Lounge original dignitary and our FDH Director of Research, Nate Noy, joining us on the phone lines. Nate, good to have you on today, my friend. How are you?
Doing great, Rick. And it's interesting that you mentioned the Lakers 0-3 start. One other team with an 0-3 start that ESPN, the magazine, picked to win the West is the Denver Nuggets. And I think there's some mismanagement issues with George Karl in the minutes there, but we'll jump in and dissect some of those things in just a minute. So,
yeah, no question about that. Kind of shocking that anybody would have had Denver winning out in the West there. I was not aware of that, but it's been an odd thing. You and I have talked about the rotation in Denver and the way that things have been aligned thus far during the season. The big shocker, of course, coming the Saturday night before the season, it had been reported earlier in the day, Oklahoma City could not work out a contract extension with Harden, or at the very least, that he had turned down their most recent offer, which I believe was for $12 million a year. $15 million would have been the max. Then the deal comes that night, ironically the same night that Oklahoma is getting thumped by Notre Dame at home in a shocker, leading a lot of people to wonder which was worse. Certainly long term, you got to think the Harden deal. And little did we know how much so, perhaps, when you look at the very unbelievable start to the season that Harden has had for the Houston Rockets. This backcourt, I teased at the U off air yesterday, Nate. I've seen the nicknames already. The brand new Houston backcourt, of course, they had already signed Jeremy Lin over the summer. The backcourt has been nicknamed by some Beard Sanity. And thus far, a 2-1 start for Houston. I think you and I are in agreement that this is probably not their year yet, but with some of the young pieces around them, you've got Terrence Jones there, you've got Omar Asif, who they're counting on to be, at the very least, a defensive presence in the middle. They signed him away from the Bulls and extrapolated that with more minutes that he would be in really good shape. So many different pieces there. Royce White, you got to think in the next couple of years, Houston really could be a powerhouse. Might be a little premature for now, but it's one of the league's foremost stories heading into the season.
Absolutely, Rick. And actually, I think that's, you know, clearly we're only a week, we're not even a week in, we're a few days in. That's the story of now, but I think that's a story that will play itself out over the course of the rest of this season and, as you mentioned, years to come in the NBA. And just on the Rockets' point of view, James Harden scored 24 last night, and everybody's thinking, man, he had an off night. A week ago, if he'd scored 24, that's not an off night for James Harden, but after how he exploded onto the scene this year, 37 in the first game with 12 dimes and then comes back with a 45 night. You know, he only went for 24 and they got beaten overtime last night. But, you know, James Harden, let me just say from OKC's point of view, I understand why they did it. And you have to understand what goes on now with the new collective bargaining agreement and how the revenue is distributed. And that if you pass the luxury tax threshold, there's a cap, as we know in the NBA, then there's a buffer between being over the cap and being at the luxury tax. And every team is basically over the cap, but only a few were over the luxury tax. including the Lakers, who are way over the luxury tax. But the way the luxury tax works, you've got 30 teams in the NBA. If you're one of the 30 that go over the luxury tax, you pay a chunk of money into a pool. Any team that isn't over the luxury tax then takes an equal cut of your money. So if you're $1 over the luxury tax, not only do you have to pay a tax, you don't get your share of that money that gets distributed among the other teams. So Oklahoma City, the difference between $12 and $15 million sounds ludicrous to the fans. Why not pay James Harden the other three? The difference isn't that James Harden isn't worth the other three. The difference is that by paying him the other three, they put themselves as a luxury tax team. They have to pay into the pool instead of getting money out of the pool, which could cost them, I don't know, $8 to $10 million a year at least. And in a city like OKC, you know, revenue stream that they have against small market, even though they are one of the more popular teams, I can see $10 million is somewhere in that ballpark being a pretty significant reason why to go ahead and move James Harden, because you just can't give him the cap, the max cap value.
Well, and again, they'd already backed themselves into a corner with their other deals. Obviously, you got to extend Durant. That should go without saying. The big extension that was given to Serge Ibaka, and then also previous to that, Russell Westbrook, and arguably one of the top 10 most talented players in the league. But as you and I have talked about repeatedly on air and off air, very selfish player, guy who jacks the ball up way too much, who is unlike, say, somebody like Boobie Gibson from the Cavs, who is a shooting guard in a point guard's body and can't really control that. Westbrook can. He's got the skill set, refuses to deploy it in that area, which just makes it all the more frustrating. And, again, they put their money in those other players, backing themselves into a corner with Harden, figuring that they'd be able to take care of this somehow, some way. And it didn't work out that way. And Oklahoma City, again, when you look at the start to the season here that they've had, Westbrook, again, in jacking up a lot of shots, the question continues to be asked when Scott Brooks is going to say enough is enough. He didn't do so in the finals last year when Westbrook's out-of-control play had really hurt them. And I believe I read earlier this week that Harden, believe it or not, had never put up more than 15 shots in a game for Oklahoma City. They never even got a chance to see what this guy could do, thanks in large part to Russell Westbrook, who, as far as I'm concerned, is going to be wearing the goat horns for a lot of things that go wrong with that team until he changes his act.
As he should, and he goes 6 for 21, they lose. I mean, and Durant takes 18 shots and goes 10 for 18. Why are you missing 15 shots in a game? You're making 6 and missing 15. What are you thinking? I mean, you've got Kevin Durant, the best pure shooter in the league right now, and you're going to take a shot that has not nearly the chance that his shot does to go in. It's just greed. It's ego. You know, it's interesting they brought Kevin Martin in, another guy historically who's an ego guy. It's funny because the first game, 5 assists for Durant, 5 assists for Martin, 5 assists for Westbrook. Your point guard shouldn't have as many assists as the best scorer in the NBA and a guy like Kevin Martin. That I don't see how they gel right. I certainly don't think they're going to make a return trip to the finals this year. And as you and I talked about off air, they did trade the wrong guy, but they were backed in the corner with Westbrook because what other team in the NBA is going to give them fair value for a guy, as you mentioned, you think is one of the top 10 players, just needs an adjustment in how he plays the game.
Absolutely. And before we look at the other consensus co-favorite in the West this year, the Lakers, let's take a trip over to Denver for a second here and talk about that. As I said, I was unaware that there was any kind of groundswell to pick them to come out of the West this year, but it's very interesting. They do strike you as a team going forward in terms of upside with the big men in Fareed and McKee, and then subsequently also Danilo Gallinari. He's been spoken of for years as a guy with a very high ceiling. Those three guys, to maybe a certain lesser extent, Ty Lawson running the show at the point. Denver does have a lot of upside in the years to come, but they still seem to be figuring out some of the rotational issues right now. Minutes being given, I know from a fantasy standpoint, in the league where you and I are co-owners, that's been a little bit disconcerting with JaVale McGee thus far. But George Karl, again, notorious for playing head games with a lot of his players. Even at this stage of his career, hasn't really mellowed much in that regard. He's always up to something. He's one of the most successful coaches in the league at getting what he has out of his players and exceeding that. But it can a lot of times be frustrating and head-scratching in the short term, and they're 0-3 right now.
Yeah, and it's funny because ESPN does this article, ESPN the magazine. They picked Denver to win the West, and they do a four-page spread on McGee. And in your first three games, McGee played 17 minutes, 12 minutes, and last night he played 23 minutes, but didn't play the last six as they lost to the Heat. Hello, George Karl. There's a major publication picking you because of a guy that you're not even giving an average of 18 minutes a night to. What's going on? And is he having that foul trouble? You know, same thing with Farid. Farid played, you know, like 14 minutes the other night. The last night he played more minutes, and they came close to beating the Heat. But you've got a guy like Farid who could be one of the best rebounders, could be one of the, you know, a Kevin Love type rebounder. That guy has instinct, and he's not getting the minutes. It's perplexing what's going on there in Denver. Clearly, in my mind, they're not one of the favorites to win the West. And, you know, their 0-3 hole may be a little different than the Lakers. The Lakers, a lot of new, you know, new guys to figure out how to play together. Yeah, Denver added Iguodala, but they shouldn't be 0-3, and George Karl better figure out, you know, how to better do these minutes, because he hasn't – again, historically in the past, last year was very frustrating. He'd play a guy like Corey Brewer 26 minutes one night and coach DNP the next night. Figure out what you're going to do, George. Stick with the rotation and play it. Don't just try to tinker every single game. I don't know if it's a matchup tinkering, if they're using sabermetrics, whatever it is. It doesn't work. Let your guys get on the court and play. And a guy like McGee with the talent he has, I mean, I remember watching him play early in the season last year when he was still with Washington, dunking from the foul line. That guy is phenomenal. He has incredible athletic skills, can rebound, can block, doesn't need to score to be productive. And you've got this asset just sitting there on your bench as you're losing games. George Karl better watch himself, because if this team doesn't make the playoffs, I think that'll be it for him in Denver.
It may very well be, even in a very competitive Western Conference, that at the very least the 8 seed is going to be available if you're even a halfway decent team out there, because of the drop-off that there is in that conference. They should be able to seize that at a minimum. Very interesting in terms of a segue there that you happen to mention the Lakers briefly as you're talking about George Karl and his rotational issues. I know going back to the time that he was in Cleveland, that was a lot of times a question with Mike Brown. And he had some successes, particularly defensively with the Cavs. And in his defense, the assortment of players that he was given over a period of time didn't necessarily lend itself to a cohesive rotation, and yet he never made it better. He was never somebody who took what was there and helped define the roles any better than they would have been defined by nature of themselves. So it's very, very interesting to see in Los Angeles. We knew it was going to take some time to come together. Dwight Howard, not really a presence in the preseason. The pieces are going to fit together, and this could be a team that wins 20 games in a row once they get it figured out. But chemistry, you know, it's a tough issue sometimes across sports. You look earlier this season at the Green Bay Packers and that offense, and, you know, people wondered, oh, is this going to be a down year for Aaron Rodgers? Nobody's saying that right now. I get the sense that may be the case with the Lakers once January and February rolls around, that this may be kind of a distant memory. But in the short term, these chemistry issues are proving to be even more befuddling than anybody thought.
Yeah, and I agree, and I think you can actually take what you just said and add some exponents to it, because you look at what just happened to them in their third game. They're 0-2. They're playing the Clippers. It's a big game. They really need it. Kobe goes for a cool 40 spot, and they get beat by 10. So what does that tell you? If Kobe decides he's got to go for 40 and they still lose by 10, they better get it figured out quick. Because with how hyper-competitive this West is, if you're, you know, I agree, they have the talent. Clearly, they go on a run of 15, 16, a bunch of wins in a row. But if you start from too far behind and you don't get one of those streaks and you play, you know, if you're playing 200 ball after 10 games, you can play 600 ball the rest of the way and you're not going to make the playoffs in the West, because it could be 45, 46 wins it takes to get you in there this year.
It very well could be. And all they got to do is look across at the locker room in the same building to see one of the big threats there. Lob City, some call it Flop City. But in the second year of this incarnation with CP3 and Blake Griffin, now they've got a healthy Chauncey Billups with them for the course of the season. Grant Hill, Lamar Odom in his return to L.A., albeit, again, that other locker room. Jamal Crawford, they got a lot of very interesting pieces there. Again, it's going to be a challenge to kind of fit them together. But the Clippers in the Staples Center itself point out one of the most interesting obstacles that the Lakers are going to face, and one of the most immediate threats, that this is a young team that's really coming together. Again, a little bit of uncertainty. You got CP3, who could walk at the end of the year still, but seems to like it there. And year one was a pretty darn good success for them under the circumstances, making it to the second round of the Western Conference playoffs, even without Chauncey Billups there for the bulk of the season.
Yeah, and they'll get him back at some point. And, you know, they had that Mo Williams was on their team, and it was, I think it was good to get rid of him. I don't think he fit with what they were doing.
Nope.
You know, he played really well last night for Utah, but I don't think Utah's got much of a chance this year. You know, and I think the rest of the story in the West really comes down to the state of Texas. We talked about Houston. We talked about the start Harden's had. I think that team will be competitive all year. Not sure they're going to get to the playoffs. Dallas has been competitive for a very long time. They've got that championship a couple years back. But Dirk's out for a while. They've somehow started 2-1. I think they're going to fall apart at the seams without Dirk here in the next few weeks. We'll see what happens with that. But the team that every single year you look at them and you say, okay, this team's got to fall off this year. Now, this is the year they got to fall off. Well, on paper, they don't even have the talent to be in the playoffs. Well, we better pick them because who they are. The Spurs are 3-0, Rick. How? How's it happen? Again, the Spurs right there, right at the top of the league. You know, Duncan's had a great start to the season. Manu's been a little banged up. Parker's played okay. But on paper, the Spurs shouldn't be undefeated still, and yet they are, and yet they'll probably be near the top of the league the entire season once again, and I don't know if we can ever figure out why that is. Maybe the Popovich and Duncan and the rest of the gang, but the Spurs surprising you so far, and do you really think they're going to be right where they were last year at the end of this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that based on what we've seen thus far, and I would have probably called this coming in, I think we're going to see something very similar to last year. I'm not going to necessarily predict the one seed in a very crowded West, but very possibly winning that division, having a super strong regular season. Again, they were such an almost robotic team going into the playoffs last year. And again, like you said, you couldn't figure out how they were doing it because it is so against the NBA model. They don't have any superstars at this point. I think you would say that the big three, I would say, still are at the star level. But there's no franchise players left on that team, and franchise players are the prime movers in the NBA. It's a tremendous, tremendous validation of Greg Popovich's system. It just shows why he's one of the greatest coaches of all time, how he gets the most out of his players, how he gets them to buy into a system, how teamwork and not taking any nights off can overcome so much. But again, in the playoffs, superior athleticism, superstars on the other side. We saw it when they faced OKC. There's a ceiling on what San Antonio can do. By the way, and we're not going to be probably talking too much about the Eastern Conference because the list of contenders there is very thin. And if you're talking about real contenders, it may not go past one. But there's a team in the East that reminds me a lot of San Antonio as far as how they do it. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But, yeah, it's a fascinating story, Nate, because it goes so much against the grain of the way that the league works. You'd like to think from a purist standpoint that San Antonio is laying down a marker for how things could be done in the future and that a team could win a title that way. But it's one of those things where I think we're not going to believe it until somebody actually, you know, fractures that model and does it.
Right. And, I mean, you talk about what they did last year, and I just think how they went right through the Clippers. You know,
yep.
Blake Griffin and Chris Paul couldn't win a game against that team. Four-game sweep. But the ceiling, as you pointed out, they didn't get right through. They won the first two against OKC, and I really thought they were going to the finals. You kept saying, no, no, no. You were obviously right on that one. But they had me convinced when they won 10 straight playoff games. But it's hard to put into words. That's what I'm struggling here. What do they do? And a couple other teams I just want to mention real quick from the West. One, I think, is a playoff team. The other two, probably not even really close. But Portland, 2-1. They won the overtime game last night at Houston. Lillard looks like a great upgrade for them. You know, they had Raymond Felton and Jamal Crawford out there last year. They purged both those two guys. They bring in a rookie that's played pretty well. And, you know, maybe J.J. Hickson finally does what he's supposed to do. Batum is very inconsistent. Goes 1-for-11 two nights ago, and they lose. Last night puts in over 20, and they win. And LaMarcus Aldridge, obviously, is where it all comes and goes in Portland. So, but they look to be a team again. That Portland team, especially with that home court advantage they have, should be there and through the first round of the playoffs, maybe make it into the second. Do you not agree?
They certainly are at that point. And, yeah, I've been a longtime booster of LaMarcus Aldridge. Fellow Lounge dignitary Kyle Ross has ragged on me on occasion for that, and thought that it's sort of a hipster affectation to like that guy. I'm not saying he's a franchise player, but again, I'm not saying that he couldn't develop into that at this point. This is one of the very interesting things here, that again, he was a high pick. He was the second pick, I believe, in the draft the year that he came out, and yet still not somebody seen right off the bat as somebody who could become a franchise player. I don't think that people thought it was unlikely, but it's different than when, say, Kevin Durant was the second pick in the draft. It's very interesting here. Guys like Aldridge and Harden. Harden was a high pick. He was a third pick the year that he came out. Are we going to be seeing a climate in the NBA in the next couple of years here of where guys can exceed that perceived ceiling for them when they come into the league? That sometimes you're a high pick, but you're still not seen as somebody who could carry his team to a championship. I think it would be a healthy thing for the league, Nate, if we see this, if we see a manifestation of where guys are able to grow past that, because that would succeed, I think, in somewhat democratizing the game a little bit more and making it likely for more markets to be able to win championships if you have players that are capable of growing past what was initially thought of them.
I agree completely with that, Rick. And you look at what happened with Aldridge's career path. I mean, he started off as a 12-minute guy. You know, he's not one of these guys that got thrown into the fray. They worked him up slowly, and a couple years ago he finally popped, and, you know, he can rebound, he can score. Do we see more of that development type time? Is a guy like Derek Williams of Minnesota the kind of guy that just needs a little more development time than being somebody that just jumps in with these high expectations? And, you know, flipping to somebody who jumps in with high expectations, you know, New Orleans is 2-1. Without their best player, who knows when he ever comes back, another head case in the NBA, and played without Davis last night because of the concussion. But, you know, 2-1 for New Orleans, I guess my point would be that celebrate your winning record now because you're not going to have it that much longer this season. So I think they're a complete pretender.
Oh, that's true. It's hard to see that nucleus coming together quickly enough this year versus a nucleus out there that I think everybody sees as a playoff team, assuming that everybody stays healthy and the front office doesn't break up the core yet, that would be Memphis. And there is talk that, again, as you said, that it's a lot more expensive vis-a-vis the salary cap with the new collective bargaining agreement, so that core might get broken up at some point. They seem very committed to Rudy Gay, but that perhaps Zach Randolph may be playing elsewhere, or perhaps Marc Gasol at some point. The thought, I think, among everybody is that if anybody goes, that would be Randolph, because, again, with Gasol, those type of centers are so hard to come by in the league. And if he continues to grow and progress, and that, again, they seem committed to Rudy Gay. But Memphis has got a very good thing. I've liked what they've been doing for a number of years. You and I joked about it at the time when they finally broke through in the playoffs. Everybody was like, whoa, Memphis, where did they come from? And I thought the real question was, what took them so long? You know, on paper, you know, this is a team that's had the talent to be where they've been at for at least the last 4 or 5 years.
I agree, and it's funny because there's two more teams I just wanted to give a brief mention about because they could slip into the playoffs. But, you know, you go back to Memphis and that the draft day trade they made to give away Kevin Love. Oops.
Yeah.
But they finally purged O.J. Mayo. He's with Dallas now. They bring in Jared Bayless, a guy that in spurts has been extremely dynamic in the NBA. This is a team that will be pretty competitive all year. You know, we'll see what happens. Will Randolph come back from that knee injury as fully as he should? You know, the T-Wolves with Love down, you know, they've only played one game. They won it. J.J. Barea stepped up again. J.J. Barea. But, man, they brought in a lot of retreads. They brought AK-47 back over from Russia. Brandon Roy decided to unretire and get out there and play some. Nikolai Pekovic coming off a great year last year at center. You know, we've already talked about Derek Williams. They've got Ridenour, and once they get Rubio and Love back, we'll see if they're still in the hunt. And if they can hang around 450, 500 ball, you get Love and Rubio back in there. They could give some headaches to some teams. And a couple years from now, you know, when these older guys are gone and maybe Derek Williams has stepped up some, they did get rid of that head case Beasley. He had to go. He didn't fit. They brought in a couple of more head cases, but Karolinko's more of a defensive player, doesn't look to shoot like Beasley did. That's an interesting team. You know, maybe they could pull an upset or two in a round in the playoffs this year if they can get everybody there. But in a couple years, that could be one of the teams we're talking about coming in every year is the T-Wolves.
Yeah, exactly. And Love is, again, he's really gone past what I and a lot of people thought he could do and become one of the absolute top power forwards in the league. Very interesting about that deal with Memphis, because it's sort of the flip side to Memphis having ripped off Houston previously there, that really incredibly stupid Shane Battier for Rudy Gay deal, because you know, Houston and their sabermetrics fixation determined that Shane Battier was a better fit for their team. And we don't need that kind of athleticism in scoring. We like what Shane Battier can bring to our stat sheet. You know, he's a stat sheet filler. I'm not one of these guys that bashes the Houston front office, but that was I'll go to my grave thinking that was a stupid move. But, yeah, Minnesota, very interesting team, no question about it. Yeah, if Love and Rubio were back now, then we could get a better handle on them and conclude that they might be a strong contender for at least the 7 or the 8 seed.
Yep, and the last team, just to give at least a mention, they start 2-1. You know, they made the trade at the end of last year, a team I want to talk about for a minute, who they traded to. Not really a contender in the East, but they purged Ellis. They bring in a center that needs some – he's injured. He's got to get up to speed, and his ankle's hurt. But Golden State's won a couple games. David Lee, you know, really stepped up last year with Curry out. Curry's back. Klay Thompson's playing well. Golden State kind of strikes me as one of those 500 teams. But Mark Jackson, I think, with some time, and if Curry, you know, elevates his game to that top tier in the NBA, that's a team that could, you know, I don't know. I guess for myself, it's more of that Golden State team could be as good as the run TMC Golden State teams. Never got to a finals, but were exciting to watch and kind of competitive for a long stretch there in the mid-90s.
They could be, but something you and I have joked about off-air, their fellow NoCal inhabitants of Sacramento, they have a lot of the same rotational definition issues. Who fits where? What's the hierarchy as far as the score sheet goes? Who's going to be getting the ball in crunch time from night to night? Again, Golden State, everything is just still way up in the air. And again, maybe in the second half of the season, things will settle down a little bit once Boga is more assimilated into that lineup. And I think they're still just used to, for so long, going with the really strange Ellis Curry backcourt, two combo guards starting back there. But yeah, it'll be very, very interesting to see where Harrison Barnes fits in and all these other young players that are there. But, yeah, the Western Conference, again, to sum it up, I mean, as far as legitimate title contenders to come out of the conference anyways, I mean, do you share the belief that it probably comes down to the Lakers and OKC at the end of the day? That's been my sentiment.
At the end of the day, I still want to say the Spurs are there. The Spurs are, you got to put them in the discussion. Best record
okay.
In the NBA 2 years running. You know, went through the playoffs on a tear last year until they ran into OKC. Harden not there. If the Spurs can take the one seed and the Lakers and the OKC have to be extended to 7 in a brutal semi, the Spurs could be sitting fat and pretty. I'm not, you know, I agree. They don't match up well against either one of those guys. I would, if you're going to give me OKC versus the Lakers right now, even if OKC has home court, I'm going to take the Lakers. And I guess if I think about it a lot, I'm going to take the Lakers over the Spurs too. So Lakers can't afford to let this hole get any deeper. But I think on paper, they got to still be the favorite to win the West. I'm with you.
That's my sense. I think it's the Lakers coming out of the West. Our time on the East is going to be but a fraction of this because, again, I think you got to go back to the Jordan days, I would say, to find a team that is as overwhelming a pick to win their conference as the Miami Heat this year. The defending league champions, two-time Eastern Conference champions. But beyond that, the complete dearth of teams that are in any position to be able to stop them. You've got a Boston team that just continues aging, spackled together some decent moves in the offseason but still lost Ray Allen. You've got the Chicago Bulls, who a lot of people would call a very legitimate contender to stop them, but without Derrick Rose for part or most of the regular season, potentially. And other teams in Brooklyn and New York and Philadelphia that are still really just kind of coming together, you know, fitting their parts together and don't have the upside to be able to get there this year. I mean, Miami just looks to be, I'd say, just an overwhelming favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference. If they suffer a key injury and that opens it up, then, boy, it's going to be a free-for-all.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And there's such a drop-off after the Heat in the East. It really doesn't warrant much conversation of the other teams because the Heat just seem to be a foregone conclusion. It's hard to argue against that. If you told me, Nate, you got to pick who's going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals against them, you know, the Celtics still have all the experience, still have, you know, but it's a lot of old experience. If I really had to pick one now, I might go with the Nets. I think the Nets could go on a run. They do have a lot of top-tier guys, at least, you know, slightly below the top tier, maybe the second tier in the NBA. Joe Johnson they bring in. They got Darren Williams. Lopez is back and healthy. They've got Humphries who can rebound. They've got Wallace who plays great defense. Maybe the Nets could put together a miracle run and face the Heat, but I just don't see how they could beat the Heat. So I guess that would be my pick if you forced me to give a two-pick from the East.
I would agree with that, that they could be very strong. I teased it before, a team that reminds me a lot of San Antonio in the Eastern Conference, and there's even a little bit of a connection here in as much as George Hill having played the point previously in San Antonio. That would be Indiana. They seem to be doing it on the same model. There's nobody on this team that you would consider to be a superstar player. Maybe Danny Granger might be on the borderline of that, but Granger at this stage of his career, maybe not so much as the scoring has gone down a tad. Roy Hibbert is not at that point yet. David West, probably a little bit short of being called a superstar, but certainly a star player. You've got Paul George, the resurrection of Gerald Green perhaps underway there. Some interesting pieces. Indiana seems to be using the same model out of necessity in that they don't have any megastar players there, and they're making it work in a similar kind of a way in the Eastern Conference. There's a plateau, it seems like, on what they can achieve. But again, they gave Miami a really terrific scare in the playoffs last year before succumbing to them.
They did do that, and you know they really pushed the Bulls 2 years ago when the Bulls had the best record, and Hansborough really stepped up in that series. And you know he's a guy in the rotation now with David West has stepped up with Granger out. With Granger out indefinitely right now, you know the Indiana team's interesting. But you're right, they're like the Spurs. They don't really warrant conversation or consideration for a definite contender, but they gave the Heat all they wanted last year. They were up in that series. Of course, they couldn't close it out, but the Pacers are interesting. They should definitely be a playoff team, probably get home court in the first round. But when they match up with somebody like the Celtics or the Nets, I just think that, you know, they'll probably fall short. But it's a tough situation to be in there in Indiana, and you got to get Granger back. But they are, you know, a good winning team. Real quick, Rick, before we run out of time, got to at least say something about the Cavs. How do you feel about where they're at, and you think they're probably more like – I'm going to tell you my point. If you had to give me a pick between playoffs and lottery, I got to say they're going to be closer to the lottery. I think they still need a little more around Kyrie to get to that next level.
I think so, and I've been rooting for them to be in a position to draft maybe James McAdoo next year. That may not happen based on the way that they started the season here. I've been a skeptic on Deion Waiters. He has started the season a little bit better than I thought he might, perhaps. So he really does have some upside. Kyrie, everywhere you look right now, you're seeing predictions that he is going to grow into being a top 15 player in the league this year, and I think that that is certainly very, very easy to believe. The Cavs are on their way. Chances are they're going to have to. They have plenty of cap room and more that's becoming available. They're probably going to have to take advantage of some situations like Houston did with the James Harden deal to take on some contracts that other teams might not want to take on. Dan Gilbert has shown that he'll do that previously, and I think even in the new CBA environment, he'll continue to do so. So the Cavs, a bright future, but, yeah, I do not see them as a playoff team this year. Just briefly, other teams there we haven't talked as much about. The Knicks let Jeremy Lin go in free agency. They're going to be working with this Raymond Felton / Jason Kidd combo at point guard. You've got, again, I continue to question how the pieces fit together with Carmelo and Amari Stoudemire. That, to me, is a team that was built to sell tabloids in New York as far as great stars. Yeah, exactly. We got great stars. How they got to fit together. Don't trouble us with that stupid crap.
Couldn't get LeBron. We'll see what Melo and Stat can do for us. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird
Carmelo,
situation there.
Every time Carmelo opens his mouth, there's another tabloid headline. So, yes, we have the guy we want.
Yeah, oh, exactly. And then the 76ers, even if they had Andrew Bynum the whole way through without any doubts, you'd still have to question as far as how they're going to fit together there. That's the thing in the East. There's a lot of transition, even in Milwaukee, which has started 2-0. They're still seeing how that backcourt is going to fit together with Monty Ellis and with Brandon Jennings, although they've definitely got some more scoring bursts than they've had in past seasons. But that's really what seems to be the story in the East, Nate. There's a lot that's churning below the level of where Miami is at, and teams that, you know, 2 years, 3 years down the road, and when you get to that time frame, God willing, you and I as Cavs fans will be including the Cavs at that level. But none of these teams, even the more viable ones we spent more time talking about in the East, look like they're ready to make that kind of move, again, short of some kind of injury in Miami that opens things up a bit.
Exactly. They're just so far below the Heat. It's just hard to really, you know, we could talk about the West. We could talk about 12 teams having a chance to playoffs. We could talk about two, maybe three teams having a chance for the finals. There's one team with a chance for the finals in the East. I mean, 90% probability the Heat are going to be there in the finals again. The rest of the stuff is just kind of noise. It's just byproduct of what's going to happen in the East this year. The Bucks, I mean, they're 2-0, but they struggled against the Cavs last night. You know, Ellis had an off game. Jennings had a good one. Last night, Jennings had an off game. Ellis had a good one. When they play teams like the Heat, when they play the Western Conference, they're not going to be able to compete with that. You know, and that's the thing. The East has to play, you know, 30 of its games against the West. And I think this year the West will continue to dominate the East in the conference matchup, and that'll leave us with, you know, the 7-8 seed in the East potentially having losing records again, and the Heat with a complete walk through to the Eastern Conference Finals. So,
yeah, and even the Eastern Conference Finals may not be as competitive as they were last year against Boston. As a matter of fact, I think the fact that that series went 7, it looks like a given right now that even the Eastern Finals will not be as competitive again, unless something else. And hopefully I, as a Cavs fan, I'm doing my level best to jinx Miami by saying, unless something catastrophic happens, unless somebody blows out a knee, hint, hint. But yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like for Miami as far as the probabilities at the moment. So, all right, my pick beginning of the season, I'm going to stick with it now. Slow start for the Lakers, but I'm saying the Lakers over Miami in 7, I think could be an all-time classic. I'm going to stay with it because I think there's a little bit more desperation on the part of L.A. This could be the last ride for Kobe Bryant and the gang. It could be the last chance for Steve Nash to get a ring. Howard's going to continue to get opportunities, and I think he's going to stay there. But the Lakers, it's a little bit more win now than it is for Miami, who, after all, won it last year. That's my sense in a very, very close finals. What say you?
Rick, I'm gonna stick with the Lakers. I hate to say a team that's 0-3 is going to make the finals, but you just look at all that talent. You look at, you know, Howard's been to the finals. Kobe has multiple rings. That's a team I'm going to say will be there. But I think the way that the playoffs shape up, that the Miami will be able to just really manage the minutes and be in great shape in terms of fatigue, and the Lakers are going to have to go all out. If they end up, you know, to start 0-3, they're staring down, you know, coming out of that 2-3 bracket, having to get through OKC and or San Antonio in the semis, and then having to get through San Antonio or OKC in the Western Finals. I don't like having to play that many close, tough series to get yourself to the finals, and as much as I hate to pick the Heat to repeat, I think given what they're going to have to do to get to the finals and given what the Lakers would have to do and or one of the other two, I got to think the Heat are going to actually win another championship. Ugh, disgusting. But, again, barring Chris Bosh going down with a major knee injury or some other unmentioned player for the Heat, they're clearly the front runner this year. So.
Well, that's an interesting point. Let's explore that a little bit before we bring this around. Because you're talking about two radically different circumstances. A Lakers team that, it could be said, could struggle through 3 rounds coming out of the Western Conference playoffs. Because, again, you have the chance that whoever's in the 6, 7, or 8 seed, or if let's say the Lakers are the 4 or the 5, which is, you know, possible, they could get tough draws going all the way through versus Miami. You could be looking at a situation where a team is maybe struggling to have to find that extra gear like Miami because they haven't had a break of sweat yet versus a team like the Lakers that's exhausted. There's a real big downside possibility for both teams under the scenario because it's such a radically different set of circumstances that each team's dealing with.
And that's a great point, Rick. I hadn't really thought about that. It's kind of like you come into a football game and one team's coming off a cakewalk, the other one's coming off a tough one, and the guys that are coming off the cakewalk aren't quite geared up for it. So, and unfortunately, you know, usually you look at these matchups and you say, oh, coaching advantage, team A, coaching advantage, team B. If it's Mike Brown versus Spoelstra, I don't even know if it's coaching advantage, Rick. I got a little respect for both those guys, to be honest with you. So maybe coaching advantage Pat Riley, who will talk to them in the locker room. That's all I can say about that coaching matchup.
Yeah, I mean, Spoelstra's probably got a tiny little secret earpiece going there, and that's what I have to believe, the fact that he has already, quote-unquote, coached the team to a championship. Yeah, it was probably Riley from the skybox, and I think we all know that, versus with the Lakers. Yeah, Mike Brown, I'd say he's on the biggest hot seat in the league this season. Got to make it to the finals to keep his job. If they lose in the finals, I think he's still better than even chance to come back. But again, the heat is really on him, and he's had legitimate excuses throughout his career for why his teams haven't won a championship. They haven't been complete teams. This is the best team he's ever dealt with, and this is one of the best teams that the league has seen on paper in quite a long time. And we seem to be set up for that Kobe v. LeBron finals that David Stern has been dying for, and in what would be just about his swan song as league commissioner. You got to believe Stern wants to see it very badly.
He does want that bad. Let me throw one more question at you, Rick. Say the Lakers are like 4-8. Say we get to the end of November, the Lakers are 4-8. Could they run Mike Brown out before this thing even gets going very far? I mean, at what point is this losing start to the season tolerable for the Lakers? 4-8, does that get you run out? I mean, as the losses add up, you really get confined into, shoot, we're going to be the 7th seed. All of a sudden we're playing OKC in the first round instead of the semis. Is there a point at which they pull the plug on the Mike Brown thing and beg Phil to come back and handle this one or somebody like
yeah.
that?
I think it's possible. All you got to do is go back to, what was it, 1981? Magic Johnson gets Paul Westphal fired. Arr, Jerry Buss decides on his own to, break off. I better watch doing that kind of stuff. I've been chastised by one of our YouTube commenters for imitating Rome when I do that, albeit it's just, I think at this point, a funny generic comedic device. But anyways, I think it's possible. I don't know how likely it is. It could become a self-reinforcing scenario of panic. That's the problem you run into. But if you have a chance to get Phillip coming off of the out of retirement or something like that, if it's an impact move, Nate, yeah. I just don't know how many impact moves are out there for them to make.
Yeah, there aren't exactly many Phil Jackson. So there's one Phil Jackson sitting out there, and who knows if he'd want to come back to deal with these headaches. But they better go on a win streak real quick, because they're going to be the talk coming out of L.A. if they don't get it going. They better get it going tonight. They better keep it going. They're going to, Nashville will be back for at least another week, but we'll see. It'll be that's a fun thing to watch. It's, if you had to ask me what are the most fun things to watch right now in the NBA, what's going on with the Lakers? What's going on with James Harden? It's amazing. It's fun to watch. And But I guess if you had to give me two stories, those would be the two. And I want to watch those two things as this NBA season progresses. So,
well, full circle. That's where we started this. That's what we bring it around to here at the end. Yeah, James Harden, the Lakers, the interesting stories in the association thus far. Nate, always a lot of fun following these things with you, my friend. And we'll be back talking about any number of subjects in the FDH Lounge here over the next couple of weeks and months with you. Thanks very much, my friend.
Thank you, Rick. Great time as always. Appreciate the time.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in at FDH Lounge, mini episode number 208.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.